on the ferry. We'll be caching in the Northwest.
And we can't do that until we bring in our capital chimp. Some say he's a city boy, born and raised in South Vancouver. And others say he took the midnight train going anywhere. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Well, you know, it's a bit of a journey to get there, but we made it. So here we go. You know what? I want to thank you for yet another wonderful introduction this evening. And you guys are getting clever there. I like that tie in there. Anyways, a quick reminder that we do appreciate the support of our patrons who help to keep this very podcast coming every week. If you want to know more about supporting the show, click that Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website.
Excuse me. Yes, please do. Please click that link. We appreciate all of our support, and we appreciate all of the contributions to the glow. And that would be the geocaching log of the week. And this week's just happens to come to us from Medicine Man of Seattle.
Boy. Oh, dear.
See, I've been out of the studio for a few weeks, and I'm just
all out of sorts. You're choked up, aren't you?
Yeah, it's just, I'm so good to be back with you guys. All right. So the glow this week is from GC7J8EE, called My First Date. And it reads, it was a chilly Sunday morning event, and who should I find but a bunch of geocachers all standing in a line. They're taking our photo as a Muggle co-worker of mine. The log passed around, and I with my pen to sign. Small hints for an unknown cache nearby. Click. Photo was taken. I'll solve this one later by looking at the pic. CRS98 with hunger and geocaching fire, knowing that Burgermaster will do the trick. Then off to Brute Force, my first date cache out in the thick. Trial and error at search spot one led to no fame. After spot two, three, and four, all of the same. Then I gave a small suggestion based on the name. Yes, indeed, the geochecker did ring true, CRS98 did proclaim. The lesson to learn, geocaching is always better with a buddy and lunch. Some unknown caches are best not to do just on a hunch. Thanks for the lateral thinking puzzle.
Nice. Well, and thanks to Medicine Man of Seattle for sending that in. I always enjoy a rhyming log. That's always a lot of fun.
A little creativity there. It's always fun.
I admit I'm jealous of people who can write poems like that and, you know, make words rhyme, because I can't do it.
Anytime?
I just tried and it didn't work.
All right. Hey, for tonight's... Actually, before we talk about tonight's show, reminder, folks, just like Medicine Man of Seattle, if there is a glow log you see or that you've written or... and you send that in. But you know what? Even better than just sending it in, call it in. 253-693-TFTC. Share it with the Northwest community. Heck, you can even use that voicemail tool on our website. And we just so want to hear this stuff in your own voice. It's, you know what? I love Jim's voice and hearing him cold read these, but I don't know. There's something special about hearing all you guys call us in. So
you can hear me any Thursday night, almost.
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 Nice. Now, tonight we're going to talk about what to expect if you're going to go after some of the very best geocaches in Victoria, BC. So we've brought back our experts and, of course, friends of the podcast to talk about that very area. So welcome back, Landsharks.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be with you guys.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be invited back.
We always love having you back. It's always a great, great episode. We talk about geocaching in the great city of Victoria. Now, I know it's hard to believe, but we could potentially have somebody listening that maybe isn't familiar with Victoria. So maybe let's start out with talking about the city itself. Can you give maybe a little quick background, give us some insider tips on what Victoria is all about?
Sure.
Basically, Victoria's in the west coast of British Columbia on Vancouver Island. So we're southwestern, probably the warmest part of Canada during the wintertime and the wettest part during the... Actually, we have two seasons. We have summer and late fall. So it doesn't really get super cold here in the wintertime. So it's a nice place to visit when it's cold other places. Victoria's home to, we have 13 municipalities here. So Victoria actually includes a whole series of municipalities, Greater Victoria area does. So there's lots of parks and different sort of groups within the or municipalities that manage the parks around the area. So lots of geocaches. It's actually a geocaching hotspot. But to give you a bit of a sense of some of the history here, there's a lot to see and do. So before the arrival of the Europeans in on the west coast of North America, Victoria was home to several communities of Coast Salish people. And then in the late 1700s, the Spanish and British explorers kind of really explored this area. And you can see that in the names of some of the waters, waterways around here, for example. You have Juan de Fuca Strait, which is actually now called the Salish Sea. And many of the names of the waterways are named after Royal Navy ships and things like that, and famous explorers from the region. And so about 50 years after the Spanish and the British were here, James Douglas set up a Hudson's Bay trading post on the site of what's now Victoria. And then a little while after that, 1849 or so, Victoria became the capital city of the colony of Vancouver Island. And the...
Well, the mainland had New Westminster. And so they were hoping that, that when the province was formed, that New Westminster would become the capital. Well, as it turned out, Victoria became the capital. The two colonies merged, became the province, and Victoria became the capital. So,
yeah, part of the reason for that was that there's a large amount of trade that was coming through Victoria. And during the gold rush, people came up from San Francisco and they would come to Victoria first, basically stock up before heading up into the gold rush in the interior and up in towards the further up towards the Yukon. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so wasn't the story I heard that James Douglas lost a bet?
I do remember something like that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go on, you guys.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess with all the trade that was coming through here, it also became the Royal Navy's West Coast base for the colonies. And it's actually still Canada's West Coast Navy base. So in Esquimalt, which is one of these 13 municipalities, is the Navy base for Canada, or West Coast Navy base, the other one being Halifax on the East Coast. So Victoria became a sort of well-to-do, very English proper place, and people, for many, many years, people would come to Victoria to sort of experience a little bit of Britain in Canada. And so then we had double-decker buses here, and you can get high tea and things like that. But there's some of the famous tourist attractions at Bouchard Gardens, opened around the turn of the century, the Empress Hotel. There's a couple of castles here. We have Craig Derrick Castle and Hatley, Hatley Castle, which were developed by one of the the first one was Robert Dunsmuir, who's one of the leading industrialists, and then his son James Dunsmuir, they built the other one. But really, there's a lot of sort of neat history here, and it goes back quite a long way, so it's quite a neat place to explore.
We have lots of geocaches here that actually help people to learn a little bit about the history. So some of the caches that we're highlighting are ones which, reflect the history of the city.
Very cool.
I'm looking forward to hearing about those, because I've been to Craig Derrick Castle and the Parliament Building and several places in Victoria, but they were all before I was a geocacher, so...
It's different now.
Yeah. What are things from you, right?
You see things from through cashier's eyes. It's all very, very different.
Absolutely. Really, and I got to say, not a lot of places in the Northwest you can go to find actual castles. So,
Yeah.
Definitely. And you can get afternoon tea in about probably 8 places.
But none of the other places are quite like having afternoon tea at the Empress. I mean,
That is true. That is true. Yeah.
Do they still offer death by chocolate?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, they do around Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that's what I remember. High tea there, and I think we had death by, or it was at least on the menu. But that would have been 26 years ago.
Wow.
It was the last time I was at the Empress. I need to go back.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, as you... obviously have picked up, the land sharks are sharing an amazing amount of interesting information about Victoria. We've got some background and history on how Victoria came to be, and we're going to really start rolling into some really great information about caching and getting to Victoria. And then once you get there, geocaching in Victoria, which of course everybody's waiting with bated breath for that. But before we get there, we also want to let you guys know, we're going to let, if you're watching live, you're going to get in on a little secret here. Our good friends the Landsharks have been generous to give away a $15 gift certificate to their store. Now, you just have to listen closely to have a chance to win this prize in the after show. All right, so there's the secret's out. So hopefully everybody's going to be listening carefully so they can win that $15 gift certificate. And thank you guys again for offering that. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, so what are the best ways of just getting over to Victoria?
Well, depending how far you're coming from, there's Victoria International Airport, which is a really nice new airport. There's BC Ferry Terminals at Swords Bay, people coming from the mainland. And if you're coming from Up Island, you can hop across on Vancouver Island's most beautiful shortcut, the ferry from Mill Bay to Brentwood Bay. There's Washington State Ferries. They come in from Anacortes to Sydney and from Port Angeles to downtown Victoria. There's also float planes from lots of places where float planes come from, Seattle and the Gulf Islands and the mainland. Vancouver. There's
cruise ships.
And there's the Victoria Clipper ferry that goes from, I think it's Lake Union, somewhere downtown Seattle to downtown here. And no, there's it's cruise ships. Union.
It's one of the piers right down.
Okay. Oh yeah. The Clipper goes to the piers. The float planes go to Lake Union.
Exactly.
We're mm-hmm. a happening place here. There's lots of ways to get here. And a lot of people arrive by cruise ship. That's pretty common to have, you know, a whole bunch of cruisers show up at the local caches down on the waterfront.
Mm-hmm. If you come by BC Ferries, that's the ones from the Vancouver area over to Victoria. Those are kind of like little mini cruises themselves. They go through the Gulf Islands. The cruise ships. The ferries are really, really nice, comfortable. They got restaurants on board, gift shops and things. Really quite a nice way to spend an hour and a half. It's a relatively short ride, but it's a lot of fun.
And the Washington State ferries are a little more rustic. The BC ferries are quite opulent by comparison. That's just the way it is. Both get you here in one piece at a very convenient location. When you get here, the way to get around is if you walk on the BC ferry, and if you don't bring your vehicle and you walk on, you can get downtown by bus, which is, you know, amazing for people that come over by foot.
Nice. Well, I was going to say you started. So we've gotten to, let's say our listeners actually get off onto the island. Now, is bus the best way, or what are the different options?
Well, the airport is serviced by transit and taxis and shuttles. The ferries, you can bring your vehicle, and then that's obvious. You would drive wherever you want to go. But there's also transit to, I think, all the ferry terminals.
There's no LRT or subway or anything like that, though. So really, if you're staying in the downtown area, there are bike lanes. You can get around by bicycle real easily. And it's fairly easy to walk around, but obviously you can only go so far on foot.
The two main highways, if you're coming in, like we have this long peninsula out to Swartz Bay Ferry. From downtown to the ferry to Swartz Bay takes about half an hour to drive, and a bit longer if you're on the bus, because depends if you're on the express route or the one that does the milk run through all the little stops. But that's the Pat, we call it the Pat Bay Highway. I think it's got a number like 17, but we call it the Pat Bay Highway. And then the other highway that goes from downtown up and over the Malahat to go north. So say you want to continue on to visit Nanaimo or Parksville, or Campbell River to go fishing, that's the Trans-Canada Highway. It's an extension of the TC.
Yeah, there's also rental bikes too. What are those?
We have these awesome new bikes here called U-Bicycles, I believe. It's the letter U, mm-hmm. U-Bike or U-Bicycle.
They're green,
and they're bright
green,
lime green. There's an app on your phone.
You can see where they all are from the app, and you just go get one, and you just ride
away.
Yeah,
you make a deposit, and then you can get that back later, but it's like $1 for 30 minutes or something. It's super cheap, and you can cycle all over. And it's not limited to downtown. You can come out to Esquimalt. You can come out to our store on U-Bicycles if you want.
And you just drop the bike off when you're done, and the bike itself knows where it is. Got a little GPS system on it, and it just tells other people who use the app where to find the bike. And there's a whole bunch of these bikes. They're all over the place.
Yeah, so we're the first city in Canada, I think, to get them. There's 200 of them, and there was the lady who started them came over from China and started it out here because she thought this would be a good city to try it out in.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah, I know Vancouver has a similar system, but I'm curious now, Chris, you said the bikes are GPS equipped. So did they just drive you right to the caches? Is that?
I wish. No, they just have a little transmitter on them, I guess, or something. I'm not sure exactly how they're set up. But anyways, the app knows where they are, and like magic. And so you leave it wherever you need to and carry on with your way. But you can also get rental scooters and things like that. My advice, though, to anybody, I see these rental scooters all over the place. Don't use a rental scooter unless you really know how to drive a motorcycle in traffic. Yeah. Because they can be really dangerous. That's another option for you too.
Well, rush hour can be a little hectic in the greater Victoria area as well.
We don't have the same like the roads in Seattle. And we came through there last week, and oh my gosh, I'm envious because we have a lot of congestion during rush hour. So if you're out caching in your downtown between say 3 and 5,
just stay downtown.
Go find caches. Pop in the stores. Go find a brew pub. Just don't try and get out.
There's lots of brew pubs.
We have lots of brew pubs.
Yeah.
Really good ones. Really good brew pubs. So there's lots to do if you don't want to get into the rush hour traffic to avoid that. Just, it's our recommendations. Just don't even try. It's not fun.
Yeah, rush hour is no fun in any city, but sounds like it's pretty brutal there. Because you're all concentrated on an island after all.
Yeah, there's only so many places they can build roads, and they're going to hit water.
All right, so our geocachers have arrived in Victoria. We've now discussed several ways to get around the city. It sounds like there's some great options. We've got a lot of Lime bikes I see in Seattle too. Mm-hmm. But of course, the big question is now is where should they go? Should they maybe look for top favorited caches? Do you have some top favorited caches they should go after now that they're in Victoria?
Yeah. We recommend searching by favorited caches. Like that's the first thing you would do. Do a pocket query and look for favorited caches near your hotel. But our recommendations are the ones that show the history. And there's a lot of really old virtuals downtown. I think we have like 9 or 10 old virtuals. Some of the ones we recommend is one called What's Cooking. And that's a tribute to Captain James Cook. Mm. And it's right across the street from the Empress Hotel. Crows Visit the Governor of Nootka is another one to do with an explorer. And it's also down in the Inner Harbor. Crows in the Square is right beside the Parliament buildings, and it's the very first schoolhouse that was created. And it's right beside the Royal BC Museum, actually, and it's on the grounds there. And it's the very first schoolhouse. It's a very, very nice place to stop. And you can actually go and tour there, too, if you visit the museum. Sounds like geocaching is a great place to drop off and pick up travel bugs. It's in a coffee shop downtown, which I think that's a bit of a secret, because the coordinates lead you to the door, and the coffee shop is called Sounds Like Coffee.
Insider tips right here on Caching in the Northwest.
So we've seen people standing outside the coffee shop, looking around, looking like, where do I go? You go in and it's in there. You need to go find it. And that's pretty cool. It's a good size one. So it's great.
That's actually good for travel bugs because it's well kind of protected and everything. It's a good size. So
yeah,
it was.
It's got more than 200 favorite points. It's very popular.
Oh, wow.
And then there's two others. These ones are
these two next two are ours, and they also have lots of favorite points. So
first one has over. So got over.
I have a story about one of them.
Which one?
This little pig went to market.
It's got over 100 favorite points.
It's got over 100 favorite points.
Yeah.
And it is in Market Square downtown, which is 4 stories, and it's a historic market. It's very old, like great big giant beams, and it's a beautiful old square. When Brian Roth and Heidi and their son came up from Seattle and they went geocaching, they were up here with family visiting. It was their son, who was about 3 years old at the time, that found it. They couldn't find it. They were looking, but his height was the advantage. So there's your hint. Bring a three-year-old. Or get down to that height.
If you get really stuck on that one too, the security guards in the market, they know about this cache, and they'll see you looking for a cache.
they kind of give away,
you know, you're kind of looking around and trying to be nonchalant, but in actual fact, you stand out like a sore thumb. And so they know what you're doing, and they might give you a hint too. So
sometimes they come over and say, do you need a hand? So one time I was down there doing cache maintenance. And so I went down there and I look all around, you know, to see if I'm being watched. And you kind of can be a little hidden. So I get in there and I reach in and I get this container and I bring it out and I'm sitting there, you know, checking, make sure we got appropriate, you know, trade items and no one's dropped something in there that's not appropriate. And the security guard came over and congratulated me on finding it so quickly. He says, wow, you did that really well.
That's awesome. Sign of a good CO, though, that you guys, you know, the security guards and management know the cache is there.
Yeah.
So then the other one, which is another one of ours, actually has, is it over 200 favorite points? Getting
not
up there.
Not quite yet.
Geocaching news, read all about it. It's a gigantic urban hide in plain sight, probably one of the largest plain sight urban hides you'll find any, you know, around.
It's good. It's a good one. There are bigger ones, like the one in Coombs. And
it's
pretty big. It might be the biggest in the city.
It's pretty big, yeah.
It's pretty big. It's a hiding in plain sight one.
It's pretty clever, though. I like that one.
It's pretty cool. That one is outside the Shark Store on Esquimalt Road.
So, nice.
So if a lot of people have that on their list.
There you go. If you go looking for geocaching news, you know, you can just maybe even get lucky and get a visit with the land sharks while you're doing that.
Possibly. Nice. And it's also a great place to leave trackables because it does get so many visits and it is very safe. So when people want to bring trackables, that's a good place to leave them.
We got our eye on it.
Yeah, it's being kept an eye on.
Well, speaking of trackables and geocachers, one of the things geocachers love are their geotours. Now, of course, the first question everybody wants to know is, are there any geotours in the Victoria area, either official or unofficial? And if not, maybe there's some, you know, special grandfathered or special caches that are really, you know, worth the time to get out there and visit.
There's no formal geotours in Victoria itself.
I don't think there could fit any in. But,
yeah, there's a lot of there's no shortage of caches here.
You can kind of create your own geo tour, but there isn't any official ones. There's no passports. Yeah. There's nothing like
that. But there are a number of good series.
There's one that just came out in the last month or so with our recent HAG event, which I'll talk about later. But it's called The Magical Hands of Time. And it's a puzzle cache, and it's created by a very well-respected and admired cacher here called Amandazon. And she puts a lot of thought into her caches. They're always wonderful. So it's a tour of 12 hand-themed sculptures that are around downtown, and it's all very walkable. And the most recent log on that cache actually mentions that someone had said that it was one that they were planning on taking visitors to, because it's a nice walking tour of downtown, and you get to see these sculptures. And they're all involving hands doing things that are about the history of the city. You know, maybe holding a canoe paddle, you know, a hand carved canoe paddle, things like that. And they end up with the final, and it's a very workable puzzle. It works well. It's straightforward to do. But this, I think it was placed, the sculptures were placed in 2012, which was the 150th birthday of Victoria, I think is when they were placed. So they've been out there for 6 years. And the other, so that's the Magical Hands of Time. And the other, what we recommend to people is if you're downtown, just start walking along the waterfront. Go to the breakwater and continue all the way around, you know, down Dallas Road, through Beacon Hill Park. You can go all the way to Ross Bay Cemetery. And there are a lot of geocaches. We have some earth caches down there. Stanley Loves Bacon has some great caches. There's a Where I Go. There's a really old webcam. Big Wave Dave's webcam is down there. There's lots of caches along the entire waterfront, and you can kind of create your own little tour.
The scenery is just amazing along there. Lots of history, and it's really also very convenient if you are on a cruise ship and people are stopping in Victoria, say on Alaska Cruise out of Seattle, they'll often stop here. So it's an easy walk from the cruise ship terminal as well.
Yeah. So a lot of cruisers do that sort of a walk because it's so scenic and there's so many caches.
Sure.
Yeah.
So those are a lot of permanent geocaches, fixed location. But maybe somebody is planning a visit and trying to figure out, well, maybe what's the best time to visit? And of course, the best time to visit any city or any location, my opinion, is when there's a geocaching event happening. So are there major geocaching events that we should try to schedule our visits to coincide and catch during the year?
We have two major events for our community. They're major events. They're not usually a draw for tourists, but if tourists are here, they always join in. It seems
they're always welcome.
They're always welcome.
Usually.
And we often do have tourists, but the one is in early January. Like it's almost like a New Year event. And it's hosted by a cacher named Lumbo Tire, who's been geocaching since January 2001. And he hosts a New Year event early in January every year. And there's a potluck and there's games and there's prizes. And it's a big social get together shortly after the holiday season.
He's in the Army in the Medical Corps. And so he actually hosts it at one of the armories in town here. So it's actually a really neat location too. So it's hosted in one of the messes. Or is it the mess?
Yeah,
there? But anyway, it's hosted in the mess. So there's a wet bar if one wants to partake. But it's also, as Helen's saying, it's potluck. But also there's kind of a military medical museum, like the armories hosts a museum also. So there's a whole bunch of kind of historical artifacts and vehicles and things like that in the armories, which is really neat. So it's a really neat spot. But there's a lot of people. It's a local favorite for sure from an event point of view.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the other annual event that we have is actually coming up this weekend in 2 days' time.
Well, there's more to it than just the 2 days.
This is the wrap-up event. So a few months ago, people could start hiding caches. You could go place a cache. So it's called a hide-and-go event. It's called HAG, H-A-G, HAG. It's our local HAG. And so people hide caches, and often there's a few hundred new caches that are released. When did they come out? February 3rd?
Yeah, usually it's about the month of February, so people will find them throughout the month, and then you can they can rate them for everything from
there's prizes like best night cache, best log, most first to finds. Things like that. So the wrap-up event is March 3rd, and it's a big event. Usually there's a lot of attendance because this is the entire island that participates in the HAG. It's the Vancouver Island HAG event. So people up island, the event's held down here, the wrap-up is kind of where the concentration is. But there are new caches hit up and down the island, and people often come down from up island for the wrap-up event. So it's at a restaurant in town that's it's a pub restaurant, and it's, you know, kids can come to. And so
when we say up and down island, just for people that are not from anywhere near this particular island, Victoria is a city of about 400,000 people. And to our area, you know, it can take 45 minutes maybe to get sort of from one side to the other, depending where you are. But the island itself would take to drive from where we are to the other end is like an 8-hour drive. It's a big, it's a pretty big island.
Okay.
So, yeah. Most of the population being on sort of the southern half of that.
Wow, that is a big island. And you guys are getting a couple hundred caches, new caches a year, just in the month of February?
And then that doesn't count, of course, the regular caches that are hidden throughout the year. That's just the HAG event.
You know, that's just
there's
simply
a lot of caches
not
here.
Fair. That's just simply not fair. So
they're pretty good caches. Like there's some real creativity out there. Like Amanda Zahn's new one that just came out, The Magical Hands of Time, is a HAG cache.
Okay.
Because every year has a theme, and this year's theme was magic.
Oh.
It was magic this year. So there's some really cool names, which I'm going to be blushing when I say one of them, but there is some really good names coming up. Yeah, there's...
it's ours.
Ours,
oh, you have to say it now. You can't leave us in suspense.
Well, I know. Okay, so the next topic we're going to talk about is night caches.
Oh, I love a good night cache.
Oh. So we have a cache that is a night cache, and it uses... We've got these black... They look like pucks. They're round, and they're about this thick, and they're
foam.
Just like... They're foam. They're foam, and they look like a little hockey puck. So our cache is called Pucking Magical.
Nice.
And it's a night cache, and it also requires multiple tools of the trade. It's a gadget cache. And we've had 9 people completed so far. We have 5 favorite points, so we're pretty happy about that.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
It's a hag cache.
It's a hag cache. Fucking magical hag cache.
Nice.
The other night cache, like we have, there's a lot of good night caches in town. Sometimes they succumb to things like
storms.
Winter storms and funguses. So if you've got fire fire tacks on the tree, they sometimes get covered over with this white mildewy stuff. So that to do cache maintenance, you actually have to go out there and go wipe all your fire tacks once or twice a year to make them be bright again.
Wow.
Or trees come tumbling down in the woods, mm-hmm. and people say, look for two fire tacks about, you know, above head height. Well, the darn thing's laying on the ground and the two fire tacks are, you know, down in the forest floor at your feet, if it landed the right way up. But anyway, so that there's a hint coming up for one that we found just before Christmas with a group of friends. We went out with a group of the locals and we found a really awesome one called On the Trail of the Pink Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, really good night cache. And we got to the final and we walked up
trail. You do need a car for this one because it goes to multiple locations.
Yeah, okay. It's a good one to do with a car and with a group of friends. And if people are coming over and want to do it with a bunch of locals, you just need to post a note on the geocaching community of Greater Victoria on Facebook and you'll often get people that are happy to go out with you. But the location of the final fire tack on that one is no longer vertical.
Well, there's a hint that you're not going to get anywhere else but caching in the Northwest.
So we were looking for the final ammo can, and we're looking at all these big trees, and it happened to be laying on the woods beside us. So
that's awesome. I can say that I have done that night cache. Mrs. Monkey and I, when we travel places, we love to try and find night caches. And
oh, cool.
We weren't sure. I mean, we know there's a lot of night caches in Victoria, and there's a bunch that are kind of over by the UVic area as well.
That's right. We have one over there.
We did have one over there. Yeah.
Still alive, I think. That was succumbing to the fungus.
It succumbed. We took that one out, I believe.
Okay. But I think yours is the one that when we started that one, we were, is that the one that starts at a field?
Yes. You do a projection from a gate.
That's the one. And we started that one. We're projecting. We're moving the flashlight around. Like, oh, there's a night tax. And then they moved. So like, nope, that's a deer.
That one was a lot of work to maintain. It kept succumbing.
That one was quite the hike.
It was good.
Speaking of quite the hike, Trail the Pink Panther, definitely you need a car. And we just had so much fun. We tell people to this day, like, if you're going to Victoria and you're spending the night, you have to do this night cache.
Yeah.
And it takes a couple hours.
Oh, yeah.
Get that one down.
But it's good, though. It's not just following fire tacks.
No, it's not.
No, it's good.
Another good one, one of the first ones we did, and we've actually taken Girl Guide groups that have come visiting to do this one years ago. It's quite old. It's still out there. It's called The Witching Hour. And it's not in the show notes. It just came to mind. But it was hidden by JRAV a long time ago. And you have to solve a puzzle on the cache page first to get the start coordinates.
Oh, interesting.
And I won't give any hints, but it's,
The hint's in the name.
The hint's in the name. The Witching Hour, it's called.
There you go. Now, is that on Coast of Fairies?
No, it's in Thetis Park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's just north of Thetis Lake. In the park.
Nice.
Interesting.
Very good.
Yeah, I would say that that's very cool. And we are planning to be coming over to the island for the Easter long weekend. So Pucking Magical is on the list now. So.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Hey, you can help us move.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it would help if you buy up all their inventory. Then they don't have to move it.
Yeah. On so many levels.
We'll be finishing our move that weekend because we have to be out of the old place by March 31st. So anyway, we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, well, if we can time it out, we will. We'll see what's going on.
You
don't have to help with
it. We've got to get up to Campbell River to see family. So that's cool. We figured if we come over on the bottom end of the island, there's a lot more caches to grab on our way to Campbell River.
Yes.
But, you know, speaking of coming over to the island for a visit, Do you guys have any recommendations on what people can do to figure out how they're going to spend the night? Because, you know, you can do some night caches, but maybe you can't do them all night long. I don't know.
You need to sleep somewhere.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of, there's a fair number of hotels and motels around, and they're relatively easy to find online and so on. But also, a lot of people come over and stay in Airbnb or VRBO type places. Airbnb usually more short term, and there's a fair number of those.
I know a couple of cashers from the mainland. Brian and Kevin have both been over and stayed in Airbnbs.
And it's worked out.
It's worked out well for them.
There's also if you're over with a vehicle in the summertime, more is better for camping. There's two really, I guess, popular camping spots. One of them is McDonald Park. That's up by the ferry. That's a national park. And the other one is Goldstream Park. And Goldstream is actually, it's a much larger campground than McDonald, but
it's BC Park.
It's a BC Park. It's well known for, Goldstream is well known for lots of hiking trails. There's lots of caches in there. It's also, it's well known for its big trees, really huge cedar trees.
Huge trees. So you don't need to go up island to McMillan Park. You just go to Goldstream Park. There's tons of caches. There's beautiful trestles. There's, you know, waterfalls. And it's quite gorgeous.
Yeah, Goldstream Park has a nature house and stuff as well. For, you know, it's quite an interesting place. It's a fun place. It's got some history too. There's an old There's an old mine shaft up there. Well, it's just closed, a horizontal one, but there's an old mine up there. There's also an old what do they call them? Like a waymark. Remember that thing?
Oh yeah. There's a thing.
There's a thing up there.
Like a brass cap?
It's not like a benchmark.
It's kind of like a benchmark. It's one of the old survey marks. It's a stone pyramid type thing on one of the trails, and it's got a little plaque saying what it was originally used for surveying the area.
Nice.
There's lots of historical plaques. So the Goldstream is a great place to camp if you're coming over in the summer and you've got muggles with you. You've got a family and you're cashers and they're not. If you come with a group. So it's fantastic if you've got muggles because there's so much to do whether you're a cashier or not.
What? Nice. Muggles?
Yeah.
There you go. And in the chat, Keats94 just said it's called a cairn. So there you go.
A cairn. That's the word. Yeah.
A cairn.
The chat also contributed that Goldstream has a really fun where I go.
Yes.
And Kev MacD says, I usually Airbnb. Contact me if you want recommendations. So
perfect. Yes.
If you need Airbnb recommendations, contact him. Now, you mentioned muggles. And some of us, well, we even have muggles in our very own family that travel with us. Maybe we're bringing friends. And maybe, I know this is hard to believe, especially if you're traveling with the land monkeys, but some people just want to take a break from geocaching. I know it's hard to believe, but it happens. So let's say you're over there with muggles or you want to take a break and you want to just do something other than geocaching. I mean, why would you? But let's say you do. If you're in Victoria, what is a must-see? What should you put on your list that you've got to see while you're in Victoria that doesn't have to be including geocaches?
If you're over in the summer and you've got kids, you've got to go to the Beacon Hill Children's Farm in Beacon
Children's
Hill
Zoo.
Park. Children's Farm.
Farm? Okay.
Children's Farm in Beacon Hill Park.
The baby goat stampede
is
worth it.
At 10 a.m. every day, all the animals have lovely condos and places that they stay overnight. But in the morning at 10 a.m., they open all the doors and all the gates, and all the goats, and there's lots of them, stampede down and around and into the goat pen where they hang out for the day. And you can go in there and sit down. And if you bend over, you'll have goats climbing on your back. They've got brushes and you can brush the goats. You can have a picture taken with goats.
Helen really likes
it. It's really so much fun. I love it when I've got someone I can take to see the goats. Anyway.
They're all baby goats.
There's baby goats. There's mama goats and daddy goats. But lots of baby goats. And the petting zoo has, there's peacocks, but you can't pet them. There's bunnies. There's all sorts of other animals you can see. And
there are other things in Victoria, too.
Bringing muggle
but
kids.
But why?
Gotta go there.
This doesn't sound like you need to see anything else, actually.
So Beacon Hill Park has a cricket pitch, and it's got ponds. There's lots of gorgeous paths, beautiful trees, flower beds, and the beach at the waterfront there.
And the children's road. And the children's farm.
And the children's farm.
The downtown
do they
core.
Have goats?
What's that, sorry?
Do they have goats?
And that's the children's farm with the goats.
They have the goats. Okay. Park.
Yeah. So the downtown core is actually pretty neat. It is. It's very picturesque. It's on the waterfront. It's one of the busiest harbors in North America, actually, with ferries going in and out, like the Coho and the Clipper. There's a seaplane port there. Lots of people. There's a
pleasure craft, like
lots of pleasure craft, sailboat going in and out. People kayaking. There's also a harbor ferry. So if you're going in the downtown area, you can get sort of from one part of downtown to another sort of part on the waterfront using the harbor ferries. They're actually a neat little way to get around too, which we
Little yellow harbor ferries. That's a fantastic way to go caching, actually, is hop on the little harbor ferries with your family, get like a day pass, and you can go around Fisherman's Wharf and West Bay and over to the Delta. And
So Fisherman's Wharf is a good place to bring muggles, get fish and chips and stuff down there. And there's lots of little interesting shops in the float homes that are there. And Chinatown, we have an old Chinatown. It's actually the oldest Chinatown in Canada and the second oldest in North America next to San Francisco's. It's not a large Chinatown. It's maybe three or four blocks kind of square.
There's this Chinese school. It's a really gorgeous Chinatown.
It's really neat. Lots of old little stores in there. And
Fantan Alley and Dragon Alley. There's fun places to go poke around. And there's caches down there. There's a couple down there as well. And it's really safe to go day or night. Like, it's one place I feel safe any time of the day or night is our Chinatown for some reason. I've had visitors comment to me that there's other cities with Chinatowns that they don't feel as comfortable in, maybe because they're not in such a nice part of town. But ours is, you know, we get horses and buggies going through there. It's a very touristy area as well. So it's well populated and a lot of people are walking around.
So the horse and buggy tours are good for something to do. And the downtown core has lots of little neat little shops, tourist shops. So it's fun to walk around there.
So guys, I'll just interrupt for a moment because our chat is getting very excited about some of their favorite spots.
It was the goats, right? It's the goats. Got the chat.
There was definitely some talk about the goats, but Dora Moore said that the Provincial Museum is well worth the visit.
It is.
It is. Yep. It is good. And it has a wonderful photography exhibit on right now. Photographer of the Year exhibit. And they have traveling exhibits that come through that are definitely worth scheduling a trip around.
When I grew up on the island, and whenever I think of that museum, there's two things that always come to my mind. And one is the mammoth.
Yep.
It's there.
And the other is the ship that you can kind of
walk. Oh yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
So I love those. Alpine's said the Royal Wax Museum torture chamber scared the wits out of me as a kid. I don't think it's there anymore, is it?
It's gone.
It is gone. Yeah,
it's all gone.
In its place is a fantastic restaurant on the main floor. It was the old steamship terminal. And on the top is Robert Bateman Gallery. So two other places that's worth checking out.
Nice. There you go. There you go. Paul says the narrowest alley is in Chinatown. I did not know that.
Fantan Alley, probably. It's fantastic. Lots of little shops in there. It's quite beautiful.
It's about as wide as reaching out your arms.
You can stand like this, take a picture with your hand on each wall.
Yeah, wow. But it's stores, little shops down both sides. It's actually quite a neat little spot.
There you go. Nice. And one last thing from the chat before because I know you guys still have lots of stuff on your list. Keats 94 would like to know if Miniature World is still in Victoria.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yep. It's a small world, after all.
The street right beside the Empress Hotel.
Yeah, and the Bug Zoo is still here too.
Yeah, the Bug Zoo is still here.
My kids still have great memories of us taking them to the Bug Zoo. So.
Yeah. I've been to Miniature World, and I've been to the butterfly gardens there. My wife loves butterflies. Yes. And there was a bird there that I just Googled and found out that the bird passed away in 2014 that liked to play with your shoelaces.
Oh, yeah.
Mike was an ibis. Bird.
Oh, cool. Butterfly Gardens is fantastic to go to on a rainy day. If you're here on a vacation and you've got a rainy day, you head to some of these, like, you know, Miniature World and the Bug Zoo, or out to the peninsula and go to Butterfly Gardens.
Yeah, I think it was a rainy day when we were there, in fact.
Yeah, because it's nice and warm and dry and humid. But
so the other place on the peninsula that a lot of people like to go is Butchart Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they have a fantastic website, so you can check and see, you know, what displays are featured right now. Like right now, I think they're probably beginning the bulb season. And you wait another month, there'll be a lot more bulbs out to see. So you can schedule your trip around things like that, or Christmas. They have a big Christmas display.
Throughout the summer, actually, every Saturday, they have fireworks, a really pretty spectacular fireworks display there, too, in the evenings. So,
what else? There's whale watching. Yeah. For people that aren't from the West Coast, if you come here on BC ferries, occasionally you will see whales from the ferries, off and on, just on either side of Active Pass. But if that doesn't happen, you still want to see whales, you can go downtown and hop on one of the whale watching tours. There's lots of them, and they're all highly regarded. I have not heard bad things about any of the whale watching companies.
Yeah.
They all talk to each other, and so they have people that are scouts that are out looking for where the whales are. And so there's usually very successful that you will see.
They're highly regulated with regards to how they act around the whales too. So if, if people are concerned about disrupting the whales, they actually they see whales. They go within a safe distance, and then they shut off the engine so that you can watch, and they're not interfering with the whales. So it's actually quite a friendly way. From the whale's point of view, to watch the whales,
And apparently, Chris, you speak whale.
I do.
I don't know that.
Did that come from Mr. That Mad from Monkey?
Kev MacD.
Kev MacD in the chat.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
And I think next month we're going to start seeing the gray whales come through, the mothers and the babies heading up north.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So we have pods that live here, like
resident killer resident, whale pods.
Resident pods, and then there's the transients, the ones and the ones that come through.
Yeah, lots of dolphins, and pretty well all those whale watching tours, you'll end up seeing dolphins, and either the gray whales, the humpbacks, or the orca.
We have lots of transients down here too.
That's a different story. And some whales.
So then if people want to see castles, there's Craig Derrick Castle and Hatley Castle, which are the two that were built by the Dunsmuir father and son.
Craig Derrick is awesome. Popular.
Yeah, Craig Derrick's awesome. You can get a good tour through there. Hatley Castle, you can go into it, but you can't go through it as much because it's actually the administration building for Royal Roads University.
Okay.
But it is worth going there and getting a little bit of a sense of it, because Royal Roads University actually is quite a historical place on its own. There's there's gardens there, like a really nice Japanese garden, rose gardens. There's lots of trails, lots of caches in there.
Tons of caches.
It used to be a military college too. So there's a little military sort of museum, if you like, down in the castle as well.
Your name is on a plaque in there.
My name is on the plaque.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
The thing I remember about Craig Derrick Castle is when you walked in the, entry hallway kind of thing, there was this, you're looking around, oh, this is really nice. And there's just a sign there, and all it says is, look up. And you look up and you go, wow. So, there's a grand entryway.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's lots to do here, but...
Yeah, there's really something for everyone.
And apparently a geocacher, too.
I mean, if you're a history buff at all, Victoria's just such an amazing place, just steeped in history. And, there's the downtown and all the areas you guys talked about. And then another place that you didn't bring up, but I think is fascinating, is Fort Rudd.
Fort Rudd Hill is really neat. It's one of the early defenses for the West Coast. There's a whole series of them, actually.
From Macaulay and Esquimalt is part of that defense system too.
And some of them were initially put in there to protect Victoria back in the, when was it, late 1700s, early 1800s. And then, late 1800s. But then when Fort Rudd Hill was put in, it was sort of in conjunction with some of the ones in Washington State as well. So there's a series of old gun emplacements in Washington, and this was part of that same kind of protective system. The guns are there. It's a National Historic Site. It's really neat to look around. If you're into military history, too, the Naval Museum at the Esquimalt Navy Base is open to the public, and that's got just an amazing array of sort of the naval history of the West Coast as well. So some of the old, there's an old, you can't really get to this because it's on the actual base, this graving yard, but basically one of the old dry docks from Royal Navy days, and there's photographs of the old sailing ships in this dry dock, and that dry dock is still used today on the base.
Oh, that's cool.
So a long, long history of Navy history on the West Coast here, too.
That's within walking distance of our shop.
It is.
It is. Yeah. It's very close. You pop over there on your lunch break.
Yep.
I love it. Hey,
yeah.
Helen, Chris, thank you so much for coming on, talking about, obviously, the city you love, Victoria.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you. It's, you're very welcome. Yeah.
And of course, as I mean, it goes without saying, anybody comes to the region, they're happy to, you know, it's easy to find us because we're at the Shark Store, mm-hmm. and we're happy to give people an idea of other things to do and see and help people find their way around.
And help them connect with locals too. If we're not yep. available to go caching, there's off we can often, you know, match people up with people in the community or at least give you some leads. And check out the geocaching community of Greater Victoria page. Facebook if you're coming over.
Nice. Love all that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Now, we've got a few more shows coming up. We're not just going to talk about Victoria for the next 6 weeks, but you know what? It sounds like from tonight, we could.
We could, yeah.
And not cover all of it yet. But next week, we are talking about Northwest Mega Events with Broncos Fans for Life. March 15th, we're talking with Jesse Tuttle and the Geo Woodstock 2018 Organization Committee or Organizing Committee. That's going to be a great episode. I really want to go to Geo Woodstock 2018. I'm trying to find
where is it. Where is it going to be this year?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
A city I've never been to. That would be fun.
It would be the first Giga event in North America.
All right. Well, following those two excellent episodes, we'll be talking about working on your challenge caches on March 22nd with our friend and guest Rock Chalk, who is an excellent person to talk about challenge caches because I think he has personally completed his Fizzy and Jasmer grids and those kinds of grids, I don't know, something like 8 zillion times or something. That's a very specific number, but he's done them a lot.
It's probably only 7 zillion.
Okay. And that follows up and wraps up the month of March with keeping your caching gear organized because, you know, it's important to stay organized, and I'm not nearly as organized as I would like to be, so I'm looking forward to that episode to learn a few things that I can, you know, slip in my little mental tool chest to use for future caching outings.
Right on. Well, as we wrap up, we want to thank our faithful Denali-level supporters. That's Team Squirrel and WorldCaching.com. Folks, if you want to know more about supporting the show, make sure you head on over and click that Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website. And you know what? I want to say a special thank you to all the people who have not only clicked on that Patreon link, but are supporting our show every month. And that list of folks includes B Pendragon, Broncos Fan for Life, Sprouter, Camp Clan, Tick Magnet, Kev MacD, Subway Mark, Dorimore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geo Nav Pros, Wino Seattle, Akerdoc, OBX Geek, Billy Robson, Nice, Antaeus, and new sponsor of our show, Keats 94.
Thank
every one of you guys. Good thing thank I took you. A deep breath that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Say, you still got through that in one breath, but each week it's getting a little harder.
It's getting tougher, but it's good. Well, hey, it's been a great episode. And, you know, between now and next Thursday night, we hope you'll all join us. But maybe between now and then, people might want to reach out, get in touch with us, find out more information about us, about the podcast, about Victoria. Mm-hmm. And so, on that note, let's throw it first to our guests, Land Sharks. Where could people get a hold of you and ask you any questions about Victoria, your store, or geocaching in general?
So I think you might have asked us a question, but you broke up halfway through it.
Oh. Well, it happens.
Sorry.
It's Wi-Fi here.
Between now and next week, if people wanted to reach out and get in touch with you, how would you like people to get in touch with you? Where could they find you on the interwebs or the great world wide web?
Facebook. We have a Land Sharks Facebook page, and Twitter is Land Sharks. And we have, you can email us to the store, connect@sharks.ca.
That's SHARKZ or Z
so
for the
connect
listeners.
Connect@sharks.ca or Z. That's another way to get a hold of us, or pop by the Shark Store on Esquimalt Road if you're coming to visit. You can also see the Shark Store itself now also has a Facebook page. So Christy and the rest of the staff, we all try to be present and answer, get back to people very, very quickly there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And Land Monkey, how about you?
Hey, well, yeah, I know you can check out our blog. And in fact, if you want to know more about the new Interstellar game that came out or has been announced by Planetary HQ, I've got a Pursuit blog entry on there that seems to be pretty popular right now. And you can find that at landmonkey.blogspot.ca. Of course, we always encourage people to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. That's just at LandMonkeyGC. And on YouTube, every once in a while, there's a new video sneaking out there. And you just search LandMonkey, LANMONKEY on YouTube. And I know what goes through your guys' heads every time I spell that out. So you can just say MOUSE. It's
I don't know what you mean.
Well, I don't know that I thought of it before, but it does now.
There you go. Well, Wits End, how about you?
Well, you know, you can find me most often on Thursday nights right here. CachingNW.com/live. Is that the right? Anyway. But between Thursday nights, oh, reach out and shoot me a message on Facebook or Twitter or even geocaching.com's messenger service. I'm Wits End. That's the only host of this podcast with a Z right in the middle of my username. Chris of the Northwest, how about you?
Well, I don't have a Z in the middle of my username.
Well, if you turn the Z sideways, it's an N, and that's kind of so.
Is that in the middle?
Of CNW, it is.
Yes, it is. Yeah, there you go. You look for me at CachingNW. That can be Twitter, Facebook, Google+, wherever you can find it. You know what? Head on over to CachingNW.com/hosts. Read our bios and find all those links that we just mentioned and a few secret ones that we just never post anywhere to see if you go over there and find it. But most of all, we want to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Don't forget that you can be part of the show. Simply call in to 253-693-TFTC and leave us a comment, question, or send us ferry tickets any time of the day or night. Of course, you can always email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Don't forget that your support helps keep quality shows coming. So if you like this show, please click the Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. The show's produced by Chris Umfenauer and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris Jay and Jim Paulwitz. The show's licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Umfenauer. And as we are wont to do each and every week, we ask you to stay tuned for
the After Show.
There you go. Now we're officially in the after show. We have to have a long, awkward pause. We don't have to. We just like it.
Why not, right? Hey, yeah. So we mentioned earlier, now that we're in the after show, you know, everybody who's hung out in the chat, this is what they're waiting for. We mentioned that there's an opportunity to win a gift certificate from the Land Sharks. So Land Sharks, I want to throw it over to you. What's the question people need to answer if they want to win that gift certificate?
So, the Chinatown,
Chinatown.
So about Chinatown, Victoria has the second oldest Chinatown in North America. And we mentioned it was second oldest only to one other. So what is that one other?
It's the oldest one in Canada and second oldest
to one other.
So Chris, if people know the answer, Chris of the Northwest.
Hello.
How do you want people to give the answers?
You know what? Tonight, let's just put it in the chat and we will corral all those answers. I'll throw it to random.org. So everybody gets a fair shake.
So it's a pretty fair shake because once the first person puts the right answer in.
Well, but how do we know it's the right answer until we announce
it? Well, that's true. I guess you can always hope on the law of averages, but there you go. So thank you very much, Chris and Helen, for offering that prize for our listeners. That's really generous and much appreciated.
Yes, very nice of you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I
put my guess in the chat.
Okay, go ahead.
I did.
Oh, good. I see that.
Yeah.
Beijing.
Yeah. It's an old Chinatown.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is North American, though. Second in North America. we said.
Is spelling an issue?
Yeah.
No, spelling isn't necessarily an issue. Unless you, you know.
Unless you spell a different city.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're completely off there. The chat was actually alive tonight, and we appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to know more about the U-Bikes, you can go to ubike.cn and find out more about there. So that's good to know. Now, Land Monkey, you mentioned Planetary Pursuit. That's what the game that geocaching is going to start. Not quite this summer. It's actually this spring, isn't it?
It is. It's starting in a couple of weeks. And, you know, there's been a lot of chatter about it. So I think the first thing I do is divulge a little secret here. So if you're a blogger or vlogger slash podcaster, and you happen to know how to bribe Rock Chalk, you get on his special list and you find out about this stuff about a day before they announce it, or earlier on the same day that they're going to announce it to the rest of the folks. So, you know, full disclosure, I had a little bit of a heads up, but not much to start writing the blog article I wrote. But even when I wrote it, facts were still kind of being figured out and disseminated. So there's some stuff in my blog article that is possibly a little misleading until you actually read the whole thing and get to the end. And one of the biggest questions people have had about Planetary Pursuit is, why do you need Friend League if the scoring is based on individual points? And there's two reasons for that. The official practical reason is Friend League is the only place on the website where you can actually see your point total. So that's why. But the secondary reason, and I think it's a good reason, it's the, you know, one of the other reasons that I'm pretty sure the folks from HQ would share, is that, you know, encourage the other folks in your Friend League to keep going. And it makes it a little bit fun, right? If you can sort of rally each other and go for those virtual souvenirs. So,
yeah, you can get all 10. And did I mention that Pluto is an official planet in this game?
According to geocaching.com, Pluto is now a planet again.
Yeah. Yay. I'm sorry. Pluto has always been a planet to me.
I
did not accept the demotion. I don't acknowledge that demotion to a planetoid or another heavenly body, whatever they call it.
Awesome. So what else do we have going on there?
Sorry, I was busy culling out all the correct answers there.
Oh, yeah.
I interrupted your work.
You did. That's okay. Three hams, thank you. You were actually positive and encouraging tonight. Last week, you really threw me off, and I was going to ban you from chat, but I almost did. But you're fine tonight. It says, Vancouver Island and Taiwan are roughly the same size, yet the latter, that would be Taiwan, has almost 24 million inhabitants, and most of its landmass is at undeveloped, sharp mountain ranges.
Hmm. Most of our landmass is just undeveloped mountain ranges, some of them sharp.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Especially when you get up island.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty actually, the northern two-thirds of the island is pretty uninhabited. There's little fishing villages or a couple of fishing villages on the west coast, and then on the east coast, the highway actually goes all the way to Port Hardy.
The east coast is quite rugged and barren.
Yeah, but there's some towns and stuff. It's actually a really nice trip to go up the island and explore up there on the east coast.
The east coast is nice.
Yeah, and to get to the west coast, you have to go up the east coast and then across because there is no highway.
A lot of the west coast is boat access only. There's a fantastic big peninsula. It's part of the Taco Ocean, Brooks Peninsula.
Park.
It's park, yeah, but there's really no way to get in there except by boat. So people are trying to do the Vancouver Island Topo Challenge and get a cache on every square of the topo map. They've got to get to Brooks Peninsula.
There you go. No.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Doesn't that hold true for most of Canada, or at least BC, that the population is concentrated in the southernmost parts of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
Much a good general rule in Canada, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all huddled down near the warmth or the warmest little strip that we can find.
Yeah, except for Edmonton. I don't know what they're thinking.
Well, most of them just They just want to be close to Chris of the Northwest.
There you go.
not in Edmonton. That was,
Sorry, Chris, what was that?
Not in Edmonton. They don't want to be near me.
Well, no.
There's something wrong with those people.
I said, I don't know what they're thinking up there. I was laughing when you guys were talking about driving up the Island Highway, and my experience with the Island Highway is you get up to, you know, amazing highway. You get up to Campbell River, you get through Campbell River, and it's like, wow, okay, we're on the old highway now.
Yeah.
There wasn't much point in building like that same kind of level highway beyond there.
It's so beautiful beyond Campbell River though, too.
It is. It's worth the drive for sure.
Yeah. Once. Just so you know what it's like.
It rubs and bite, and it's just gorgeous up there.
Yeah.
Nice. Absolutely. Kev MacD says, interesting fact, Victoria is actually south of the 49th parallel.
Yes.
Way.
Yeah.
So. Yes. Way. Yeah.
There's an interesting story that goes along with the border, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, and it's to do with where the border is between Canada or between BC and Washington State and the water. And there were two straits. Harrow Strait is where the border is now. But on the other side of Harrow Strait, or on the other side of San Juan Island, there's another strait. And it was up for debate whether or not San Juan Island was Canadian or British at the time or American. And so on San Juan Island, there were two camps. There was an actual American camp on southern San Juan Island, and the Royal Marines had set up a British camp on northern San Juan Island. And they basically lived in harmony, but with this sort of contested border piece there. And so at one point in time, I think it was an American farmer shot a pig from a British farm that had gone into his land, and he shot this pig. And eventually this dispute, it was called the Pig War, because that was the only casualty of this dispute. And eventually I think the British and the Americans agreed to have Kaiser Wilhelm, who was leader of Germany, to come and basically arbitrate the border. And he decided that it would be Harrow Strait. And then the British moved out. Hmm. And when the British moved out, they chopped down their flagpole in the British camp, and said, there's no effing way that an American flag is flying on our flagpole. So they took their flagpole with them. And it was just a few years ago that the British gave the Americans a new flagpole and said, you know, here's a new flagpole for British camp. And we're sorry, but basically, you know, we're just sort of making amends. And then so in exchange for that gift, the Americans now fly a Union Jack on that flagpole. So British camp has this British flagpole, which was a gift to the Americans, and the Americans fly a Union Jack on it in sort of appreciation. So
that is cool.
That's sort of the end result of the Pig War.
And now I want bacon. And Bryland contributed that today is International Pig Day.
Well, there you go.
I can only accept that is true because I have not verified it. But
I thought that it was pink shirt day today too.
Well, that would go with the pigs.
Yeah, pigs are pink. Yeah.
That's true. That's true. See, pigs in pink shirts.
I think there's like 26 different days each day of the year.
Yeah.
What do you want it to be? Yeah, we can do that.
Where do you want Togo today?
Exactly. Thank you, Microsoft. Oh, let's see. Breilang, you know, the research department has done an incredible job this show and every show.
The Breilang Research Department.
Well, mm-hmm. It's not only Breilang. Kev MacD kicked in. You know, we had several people really work hard at this.
Now, I am kicked in a few things too.
Yeah, there you go. So Breilang got the prices for Washington State ferries and BC ferries going from Vancouver or Anacortes to Sydney or Victoria Toronto. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all within this area.
Yeah.
Very, very close. Very, very close from a price point of view. I think you did the exchange wrong on the Washington. Oh, no, that's right.
The Washington State Ferry is more money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From
Anacortes. It's a longer ferry trip. That's about a 3-hour ferry trip, though. And it also usually stops in Friday Harbor, I think, on its way over. It sometimes makes a couple of stops. I'm not sure which ones, which direction. It's twice the length of time.
So from Anacortes to Sydney. Well,
the Coho ferry that runs from downtown to Anacortes is also similar price range.
To Port Angeles.
Yeah, so they're around
Port Angeles.
What did I just say?
Anacortes.
Yeah, Port Angeles. Yeah. The one that goes from downtown to Port Angeles is the Coho ferry or the Black Ball ferry, and that one is around the same kind of price point.
Yeah.
So they're around $75. Well, from a U.S. dollar point of view, $60, $70, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It shuts down for 2 weeks every January for annual maintenance. So there's no ferry between here and Port Angeles for 2 weeks in January, which is not usually so bad because it's kind of the rough, windy time of year anyways.
Mm-hmm. Something that's important, though, if one is coming by ferry, is that the Coho ferry, which is a car ferry from Port Angeles to Victoria, it's really important to make reservations on that. They leave about 12 spots on the ferry for drop-ins. The rest are all reservations. And the other ones, however, BC Ferries and Washington State Ferries are more a drop-in ferry.
Yep,
you can make reservations on BC Ferries. I'm not sure about Washington
20%
State.
20% reservations, 80% for drop-in. It's the other way around.
Yeah, it's the other way around. They're designed for just drive on as you know, taking the passengers as they arrive.
My advice, if you're thinking of coming over on a long weekend or pretty much any weekend in the summer, is make reservations.
Yeah.
For a car, is walk-ons accepted?
Walk-ons is no problem, okay. Either way.
Yeah.
Occasionally they fill up for walk-ons, and that's mm-hmm. because they run out of life jackets. They can only take so many people mm-hmm. because they've got so many life jackets. So that happens like Good Friday. Big holidays, and people are, especially university students, college students coming back to the island from the mainland for the long weekends. That's the time when you might see foot passengers get cut off, but it's pretty rare.
Very good. What else do we have? So it's about $75 with a car and a driver, no passengers. So passengers cost extra.
Yeah, and the passengers, each person pays
like $15 or $16, $18 per person.
$17.50, $18. Yeah. So that's each person. So if you are walking on, you as a passenger in a car, you pay the same as if you're walking on, and that's about $17.50 or $18.
Nice. Now, Breiling also says he's running an event similar to the HAG called the Fraser Valley Cash Bash. Announcement event is March 11th. That's GC7, Juliet Romeo 0 Juliet.
That's great.
And the caches will be published May 5th. Wrap up event is June 2nd.
Very cool.
Good luck. I hope it's very successful.
Yeah, that should be fun.
They're fantastic over here, so I'm sure it will be.
And Land Monkey, why don't you read that next one?
All right. So folks who may have watched the video of some previous episodes may have noticed that I got a pretty cool sweater for Christmas from Mrs. Land Monkey. And Wet Coaster obviously noticed and sent us a link in reference to my monkey sweater, my sock monkey sweater. And the story says that a woman in Merritt, so folks, we've talked about gold country before. Merritt is like right in the heart of gold country, British Columbia. So a woman up there is in hopes to reclaim her world record for creating the world's largest sock monkey. So yeah, back in 2009, Cheryl Douglas created Oscar, the biggest sock monkey the world has ever seen, according to Guinness. Not the beer, Guinness World Records.
Yeah.
I think if we go by the Guinness Brewery, you can pretty much claim anything is the biggest you've ever seen. But anyways, the first Oscar perished in a balloon store fire. That sounds tragic, but at the same time comical for some reason.
They actually show the burned latex hanging down through the racks. It was quite sad.
It is sad if that's your business. And I guess I shouldn't make light of it, but just odd things. Anyways, so enter Oscar II. I guess Oscar the second, Oscar Jr., I'm not sure.
Oh, he's not junior.
He's not junior. Okay. He is made from 416 wool socks that were cut apart and stitched back together. So,
wow.
There you go. Well, you know what, Cheryl Douglas? Good luck on your run for that world record. And, you know, if that's going to be up in merit, what a great stop for a Gold Country cash.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Oscar, too. Boy, I want to say he was over 13 feet tall and 50 kilos.
Oh, my gosh.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's he stuffed with?
Love. I don't know. I would assume stuffing.
Kilos.
Bananas.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. Oh, there's a great story.
Okay. I went ahead. We had 10 entries into the gift certificate contest.
What about Wits End and I? We put some entries
10 correct entries.
Oh, okay.
Wow. And I don't know if you knew, but this may come as a surprise. The answer was San Francisco. I accepted San Fran. I think there was one Fran. I even threw that one in. I don't know. Maybe they were talking to their girlfriend or wife. and I took those 10 correct names, ran them through random.org. And the winner is, who's going to read it out? Do we need a drum roll? Alpinies.
Alpinies GC.
Alpinies? Is it Alpinies or Alpinies?
You know what? I'm not sure. I've heard it pronounced a couple of different ways, and I haven't met them yet, although I think they're up in our neck of the woods here. So
I believe it was typed out last chat, but... Or, you know,
well, congratulations.
So, congratulations.
They're still listening because I saw
the chat. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. So, if we can get a, what do we need? An email address or something?
An email address, some kind of contact information. Mm-hmm. Or they can send us a note if they want to connect@sharks.ca.
There you go, Alpinies. So, send an email to connect.
Or message us on Facebook or, you know, help me find Land Sharks on Google.
And they're in Fort Langley.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Nice.
Fort Langley is a beautiful spot to visit too.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Well, Chris and Helen, thank you so much for the generosity of giving away a gift certificate during our show.
You bet.
Really appreciate that.
Fantastic. And thanks for joining us tonight. And thank you for all the work you guys did to prepare to share so much great information about caching in Victoria. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, very awesome. that was mostly her. She outdid herself on the research.
No kidding.
Well, you got to do it right. Yeah. Caching Northwest expects, you know,
top notch
stuff.
Well, that is true.
Content. Yeah, yes. That was fun. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. And folks, thanks for tuning in and staying with us through the after show. Until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.